Pretty much anything you can think of in life comes with a list of pros and cons. Nothing is perfect, though some things can seem awfully close. That's kind of how I like to think of living in Alaska. The list of really great things about living here so far outnumbers the list of bad things that the bad list is essentially inconsequential, at least until you have to deal with one or more of those bad things. So, what sort of things would be on your short list of negatives for living here? Perhaps certain aspects to the cost of living, such as gas or food prices. Those are certainly downers for a lot of folks. Or maybe the biting insects in the summer. Certainly no one's a fan of mosquitoes, White Sox, or no-see-ums. While we learn to deal with it, some people don't really care for the lack of daylight hours in the winter, or even the cold. I have one thing that's really not something I enjoy, though it's not something I do very often anyway, so it's not something I normally think a lot about. Hiking on the tundra. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. I guess I should clarify that just a bit. There are varying types of what we call tundra, and I'm referring to the really squishy, boggy type that seems to suck the soul right out of you with every single step. I'm not a small guy anyway, and not in the best of shape, so I don't need any help when it comes to making the walking more difficult. I guess what had me thinking about this was a few weeks back a friend and I had to pack not one but two caribou across about a half mile of the really bad stuff. I'm talking about the stuff that's essentially floating vegetation over a whole lot of water that threatens to swallow you up to your waist if you take a wrong step. That's the stuff we had to move the caribou across. It was not a fun experience. That said, tundra as a whole is something of a defining feature for much of our state and also a good portion of Togiak Refuge. It's a unique biome and one that people from the lower 48 just don't understand because Alaska is the only place in the United States where you can find any. Today, I'd like to touch on tundra just a bit, but also mention a few other things as well. Tundra is found across extreme northern Canada and the northern portions of Asia as well. In our state, tundra can be found along the western and northern coastal areas as you begin to get away from what we would consider the interior. The boreal forest of the north, composed of spruce, birch, and cottonwood, and what we called taiga in elementary science, give way to treeless areas composed of short shrubs, mosses, sedges, and lichens. Even the flowers are shorter in stature, such as 6-inch tall and shorter daisies that dot the landscape on parts of the refuge. Small lakes and ponds are also in abundance, and it can have a surreal look when viewed from the air. The word tundra comes from a Finnish word for treeless heights, the Finns being no strangers to tundra. We tend to think of tundra areas as treeless ecosystems marked by long, cold, oppressive winters and short, temperate summers. Tundra can be found at higher altitudes, called alpine tundra, but can also be found across vast stretches of lowland areas. Tundra is a unique combination of a lack of trees, cold air temperatures, wind, permafrost, and extreme seasons due to the long days of summer and the long nights of winter. There's no single factor for why trees suddenly stop. Rather, it is a conglomeration of things including short growing seasons, strong persistent winds, and permafrost that serves to repel deep root formation. The net result is you won't be climbing many trees across tundra areas. Colder air is also a defining characteristic, and not just in the winter. Summer temperatures typically aren't anything you'd want to spend a lot of time sunbathing in. Across many tundra-dominated areas of Alaska, it's also true that rainfall is fairly light, though no one would ever call tundra dry. In fact, that was something of my complaint at the outset. Some tundra areas seem like a bottomless pit of suspended soil and water, with a light covering of vegetation across the top that gives you the false hope that you can actually walk on it with any degree of dignity. Areas like this occur because of the permafrost, which acts as an impermeable layer under the thin layers of tundra soil. These layers trap a whole lot of existing moisture close to the surface. The net result is a successful caribou hunter's worst nightmare in terms of packability. The only way my hunt could have been worse is if it had been a moose. Honestly, tundra is another one of the cool things about living here. There is nothing quite like it. It was wrong of me to categorize it as a bad thing. Still, it's not always the easiest to walk on, and certain types of it are enough to fill hunters and anglers and berry pickers with a certain degree of anguish, whether they're successful or not. I'd like to give a shout-out today to a couple of groups of people, one large and one small. The small group would be the nature riding class at Dillingham High School, as taught by Mr. Eric Leitz. They invited me to go on a nature hike with them this week, with the goal of discussing the process of riding, even as we cast about for an hour or more to see just what Mother Nature would reveal to us. Fortunately, we got a very fine morning for the hike, with almost no wind, just a bit of fall chill in the air, and good visibility. Most of what we saw was a number of different bird species, the best of which was a flock of male and female pine grosbeaks that continued to feed away happily, even as we moved past at a distance of less than 10 feet. It was fun to be able to share little tidbits with the kids about what we saw, such as the color variations of the grosbeaks, and to be able to probe their thoughts on riding, even as I shared with them about my background with it. So if you're a member of Mr. Leitz's nature riding class, and you're hearing this, thanks for the invite this week. I had a really great time. And I know that the students would be willing to say the same if for no other reason than because I shared granola bars and chocolate with them. The other group I'd like to mention is all of the folks who stopped by to visit with us during our open house event last Saturday, celebrating National Hunting and Fishing Day and also National Public Lands Day. Despite some really crummy weather conditions, to include strong winds and heavy rains, we had a very steady flow of folks come to talk with us and participate in some of the activities we had set up. The cook tent always seemed to be full of people, and there was always plenty to eat and drink, including hot dogs to roast, s'mores to be made, and hot coffee to be had. Some of the other things that seemed to attract a lot of attention was the caribou shoot, which had people of all ages picking up a bow and taking their best shot. The sausage-making demonstration put on by Pat Walsh, which produced some of the most delectable meats you'll ever have the chance to sample. The kids' fishing pond, which saw a lot of young ones walk away as happy new owners of a toy fish and a bag of candy, and the trap-setting demonstration put on by Andy Aderman. Everyone I talked to seemed to have a pretty darn good time, and it was well attended from start to finish. For those of you who stopped by to visit and celebrate with us, thank you for helping to make the day the success it was. Also, I'd like to say thank you to the American Heritage Girls, who helped man many of the events, and to the staff of Togiak Refuge for their support in putting this together. It has been and continues to be an honor and privilege to work with the people that I count as my colleagues. One last thing to mention that has relevance for a lot of folks right now, spruce grouse hunting. September and October, well, can you believe we're up to October already? Are two of the months that people traditionally get out and really get after spruce grouse. A part of that is people are likely keyed into hunting during the fall anyway, and another part of it is that grouse just seem to be a lot more accessible during those months. The reason for that is that they are often found on or by roads and gravel beaches. Spruce grouse or hens or chickens or whatever you want to call them need to ingest large amounts of grit in the fall. Grit amounts to small stones and pebbles kept in the gizzard that are used to grind up certain types of food. This happens when they make the change from the berries and leaves of fall to their winter menu of spruce needles. During the fall months, adults and young pick up gravel along roads, shoulders, streams, and lakes. They are visible and often quite approachable, which gets a lot of people excited about getting out and hunting them. 22 caliber rifles and pistols, as well as shotguns of varying sizes, are all used to successfully harvest spruce hens. Just make sure you have a current hunting license, if you're over 16, permission for the land you're hunting, if applicable, and remember that it's illegal to shoot on, from, or across a public roadway. Grouse can be cooked up in a lot of ways, including grilled, fried, baked, and crock-potted. For specific ideas, I'd suggest doing an online search and experimenting. Many people really like to slow cook them in a crock pot with cream of mushroom soup. One of my own favorites is to wrap them in bacon, and isn't everything better with bacon? Season them up good and bake them in the oven. Enjoy fall while it's here. Take the time to get out and revel in some bug-free outdoor recreation. And, as always, shoot straight and be safe while you're out there. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.